Support for Level Up comes from Davis School District and Clearfield High School. We hope you enjoy, and thanks for listening.
I think it's cool to learn a foreign language because you have more power, and like you get to communicate with many different parts of the world.
I love learning languages because it helps expand your world knowledge and really helps you be able to connect with people from other countries.
I think that it's important to learn the language and understand the culture that comes with it.
Learning Spanish is really fun. It really helps out with any jobs or anything in the future.
And the ability of speaking more than one language makes you so powerful.
Hola, buenos días.
Bonjour.
Guten Tag.
Ni hao.
Hoy, mi nombre es Chimari.
Ciao, y mi nombre es Claudia.
Hello, my name is Melissa.
Estoy estudiando español.
我爱中国。 我学中文.
Ich liebe Deutsch. English is fun.
Français est incroyable.
Netherlands, Portuguese,
Italiano.
Español es muy divertido.
It's been fun to be in American high school and to learn about the American culture and to meet other people.
Because I have a lot of family that lives in Germany.
I like to study French because I think it's really fun and it's a very pretty language.
And I think learning another language, it's important because you can communicate to other people. You have like open doors for like professional world or even your personal world.
Hello and welcome to Level Up, a podcast about modern approaches to teaching foreign language in the classroom. In a word, Level Up is about proficiency-based instruction, and our goal is to talk about what that means, why it's important, and to discuss what research-based activities and practices best support proficiency-based teaching. We also hope to lightheartedly explore our own personal successes and failures as foreign language teachers as we strive to do and be better ourselves. With that, let's get into Level Up. Brandon Welker, one of your hosts for this new podcast, and this is Level Up. Now, Level Up, the phrase, refers to the challenge we extend to every foreign language student in our classes in every activity, assignment, or assessment that they complete. As students progress through each semester and each year of instruction, we also want them to steadily progress through the levels of proficiency as outlined by ACTFL, the American Council on the Teaching of Foreign Languages, in their proficiency pyramid, which we'll discuss later. And for students to do that, they need to strive to do the things necessary to level up or increase their level of proficiency. This includes things such as using more vocabulary and details in the sentences they create, utilizing more conjunctions and prepositional phrases to expand meaning and enrich the context, and employing circumlocutional strategies to express ideas while talking around words with which they are unfamiliar. Level Up the podcast, then, aims to help other world language educators in their own classrooms and to provide a forum where we can share positive plans and ideas that will help all of us become more effective world language teachers and better at helping our students along the path to proficiency. I also think we hope to do our small part in advancing the cause of teaching foreign languages in Utah schools and even in all U.S. schools in general. We believe that the learning of world languages and cultures is extremely valuable to our students, regardless of the career paths they choose, and will continue to be even more important to future generations of global citizens as technology continues to bring our world closer and closer together. So that, in a nutshell, is Level Up, and we are excited to get started. But before we get into the meat of things here, I'd like to introduce you to our other regular hosts and contributors, all world language teachers at Clearfield High School in Davis County, Utah, Miles Nance, Davin Lemke, and Roger Burt. Miles, I'm going to have you start. Would you tell us what you teach, your background with the language, and your general teaching background, please?
Yes, since you asked so nicely, I'll be glad to. I took French at Weber State for 3-4 years before I decided to go away from math and get into just French and become a teacher. All of my French learning comes from pretty much comes from Weber State. I did do a study abroad in La Rochelle in France, and that's where I took the grammar and knowledge that I gained at Weber State and actually turned it into a language that I could communicate with. As far as teaching goes, I've been here at Clearfield High School for 3 years, or going on to my third year.
Okay, Davin, tell us about yourself.
So my name is Davin Lemke. I teach Spanish here at Clearfield High School. My background from Spanish, a few years in high school, but the real language came when I lived in Mexico City for just under 2 years. That immersion in the language is really what helped me teach it. And then I did a minor in it at Utah State University, and then a teaching license on top of that. Been teaching here at Clearfield High School. This will be my fourth year.
Great. Roger, go ahead.
My name's Roger Burt. I teach Spanish here at Clearfield as well. My background with the language, like Davin, I had the opportunity to live in Mexico for a couple of years, and I was in the Guadalajara area. And then after I got home and had been home for a while, I decided to get back into pursuing my own education and attended Weber State with the focus of being a football coach, and figured I had to teach something, so I might as well teach Spanish because I felt like I did pretty well with Spanish. And the more classes I took at Weber State, the more I just fell in love with the program and the methods of teaching, the idea of language acquisition. I just thought it was really, really neat and something that I could do well. And then as soon as I graduated from Weber State, I got a long-term sub and got enrolled into a master's program through Southern Oregon University, where the classes were all done in Guanajuato, Mexico, so I had to go to Mexico every summer and live in the culture again and be surrounded by the language again for 3 years. And that, to me, was just awesome. And then I got a teaching job at Centerville Junior High, was there for half a year, and was asked to come interview at Clearfield, and I've been here for 5 years and just love every day.
That's great. It's actually kind of fun to hear you guys talk about that, because I haven't ever asked you personally about your background. I didn't realize you were in Mexico for 3 summers, for example, Roger.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun to go down with my family.
That's awesome. Well, so we have French and Spanish, and I teach German, and I'll just say my background really quickly. When I was in high school, my dad got a job over in Germany. He's a government employee. And I lived there, graduated high school at a DOD school, that's Department of Defense Dependent School, and then came back, and we lived off base, by the way, because my dad was a civilian employee. Came back later for a couple of years, was in Switzerland and Southern Germany again, so that was my background with German. And then Weber State, I studied that there at Weber State. I have been at Clearfield, this will be... Miles and I came at the same time, so let's see, this is our third year here, and it's just been a lot of fun. So we have a good group. We're excited to talk to you about some of the things that have to do with proficiency and get going on this new Level Up podcast. All right, our first segment today that we wanted to talk about is just about proficiency itself, and we're all going to take a turn here and talk about different aspects of proficiency. I am just going to quickly go over where we've come from, how we've arrived at proficiency in teaching foreign language in the United States. And I need to preface this by saying that I am not a history teacher. I'm not an expert on the history of foreign language teaching, but I do understand the basics, I think. We definitely welcome any input from any listeners or anybody else that want to add to it. I don't remember a lot of this from my training at Weber State. I just remember hearing about these things in trainings since then, continuing education type classes. But basically, if we very quickly go back to the very beginning of America, 1776, from that point into the mid to late 1800s, there really was no federal or local government oversight in how foreign languages were to be taught. It was really mostly just out of necessity. You know, wealthier families would pay for private tutors to learn foreign language. It wasn't a big thing in schools. Federal and local regulations kind of started to come into play in the late 1800s. And if we go all the way up to World War II, there was kind of the first significant shift in philosophy on how language should be taught, and that was driven by the Army and the way that they trained their spies and their translators and those things. And what they did became to be known as simply the Army method, and it was pretty successful compared to language learning that was taking place in schools at that time. And it really made us think, as educators, think about the way that we were teaching foreign language. And then what the military did was it was just an intense, they would select the brightest and most willing people to learn, first of all. But they would train them for 12 hours a day, 9 months at a time. They would use native speakers in small group settings. And they, you know, their goal was perfect comprehension and native-like accents, because that fit their need, especially for their espionage programs. But it was just very intense, and it was very teacher-to-student. The gradient was teacher-to-student. That was pretty much it. It was just an input of massive amounts of vocabulary and accent training and things like that. And so we kind of adopted that in schools, and they have that model. Many teachers may have seen this, but it's just a circle with the learner inside the circle, and all the arrows are just coming into the circle. At that point, we would just throw information at them. We'd throw lists of vocabulary. We'd throw lists of grammatical rules and structures and just ask them to recite it. It was just rote memorization. At the same time, sociology and psychology were becoming more recognized sciences, and that had an effect on the way that we looked at and taught foreign language. And we kind of came to the audiolingual method, which was a combination of the Army method and some behaviorist theories, some psychology theories, and that was still a lot of rote learning input. They also used language laboratories, which we still use today. Just a fun fact, the first language lab ever was installed at Louisiana State University back in 1947, so this was after the war. And again, it was just a lot of input to the student, and then they would respond and be assessed that way on how well they responded after all of that input. Later, you come into the 80s and the 90s, and you start talking about cognitive theory and the approach there, cognitive and sociocultural theories. So what that meant was we began to look at how children acquired their native language and use some of that in the way that we did it. And one of the hallmarks of that era was dialogues back and forth. So the model in this case, if I can describe it, as another circle with the learner inside, or two circles with two learners with arrows going back and forth. So it was just back and forth between them, and they were reciting memorized dialogue. And that was to mimic a child growing up in their household, where the mother says, you know, speaks to the child and says, do you want some food, or are you hungry? And the child would respond, yes, I'm hungry, or I want milk, or, you know, whatever. It was just a quick back and forth. So it was kind of a model after the mother and child interaction growing up, and the father and the other parents and siblings and their interaction with that child. Now, in 2005, in foreign language teaching circles, that kind of became known as the year of foreign language teaching. And it was another paradigm shift, and a shift in the way that we approached it, and that was the official kind of introduction of proficiency, although the idea wasn't new that year. That was just the biggest push around that time. And we're going to talk about what proficiency is, but that's kind of where we've arrived, and not to steal Roger's thunder too much here. He'll be talking about what proficiency is, but we shifted from memorized dialogues to kind of measuring what can a kid do. We outline and we delineate all these things that a student should be able to do at certain milestones throughout their training.
and we measure how they do with those skills and the output that they can create, both written and spoken, and also the things that they can comprehend reading and listening. But I will stop there and let Roger take us through what proficiency is and kind of paint a picture of where we are now and what our strategy is.
All right. Proficiency, like Brandon mentioned, is really the nuts and bolts of it, what individuals can do with language. ACTFL's quote actually is what individuals can do with language in terms of speaking, writing, listening, and reading in real-world situations in a spontaneous and non-rehearsed context. So, yeah, we want to see what students can actually do, the types of things that they can go out and perform if it were a real-world task, the types of things that they can handle speaking. Can they go and introduce themselves to someone at the novice level? Can they go and express some personal needs to someone in a store or out to catch a bus or whatever? Can they actually do those things if they were dropped off in the middle of some Spanish or German or French-speaking country? What things can they do to survive and make it? So along with that come a lot of different things. We have can-do statements at each level of our language teaching to be able to show students the types of things that they will be able to do as they advance and progress through that level and through that unit in particular. And we have statewide can-dos and district-level can-dos and unit-level can-dos to help the students and their parents and us see how we need to be teaching these students, how the types of things that they can do when they are done, and the types of things that they can expect to be moving towards.
Perfect. Roger, thank you for explaining that. I've also asked Davin to explain the benefits of proficiency versus some of these older schools of thought. Davin, would you do that for us?
Yeah. So I remember when I first started here at Clearfield, it was my first year teaching. I met a lady that lives in my community. And she actually used to be a Spanish teacher. When she found out that I teach Spanish currently, her first question right off the bat was, "Oh, good. Well, you still teach them how to conjugate those verbs, right?" And she looked straight at me when she asked it, kind of like that was the whole goal of the classroom. And I just responded. I said, "Oh, they learn a lot of verbs," and that's all I said. So I didn't directly answer the question, because they do learn a lot of verbs in this proficiency model that we do, but it's not this grammar for grammar's sake, as the phrase is, type of teaching anymore. And the benefit is that when students leave the classroom, now, in my classroom at least, the goal is, as Roger was saying, is they can actually do a lot of stuff. They can fulfill those can-do things. The advantage is the students can use the language in real-world contexts outside of the classroom. And it's not just for a grade. It's not just filling out a worksheet. I've had students return to my class and they'll say, you know, "Señor Lemke, I used Spanish yesterday. I was at work and some people came in that didn't speak English very well. And I didn't speak Spanish very well, but I used some of my Spanish." And it's cool to see students use their language outside of the classroom. And they can actually listen and they can actually respond and they can read and they can write in real world situations. Whereas the old school train of thought was rote memorization, as was discussed, the idea was, well, you have to memorize all these verbs. So you have your to be verb and you need to know how to say I am, so the soy, and you go through all these charts, but then you left the classroom, you had no idea how to use that in a conversation. So you had all this knowledge in your head that you had no way of outputting in a comprehensible way. And one challenge with the old school way of thinking is that so many teachers were focused on accuracy, making sure students got it right, whereas now we're focused on proficiency, their ability to use the language, knowing full well that they're never going to get it 100%, and that's okay. The other part of that is it's a complete shift in how the classroom functions. It's a complete shift in classroom management. It's a shift in activities. It's a more communicative type classroom. It can be a little bit more chaotic, but Miles will talk about what does a proficiency look like in the modern classroom.
Yeah, of course, leave it to the French teacher to try to organize the chaos. I see how it is. No. That's a perfect, though. As for me, one of my keys for my students, and I try to communicate this as well as I can, and I know I don't do a good enough job, but trying to let them understand what is the purpose of language? Why do we have a language? The purpose of a language, its only purpose, is to communicate, period. That's it. Not to be perfect at communicating, but to get your idea across. If you can, depending on how well you can get your idea across, that's where proficiency comes into play. So it is a big change from how languages are taught, even how I was taught when I went to Weber State, and even back to high school. It wasn't entirely grammar-based, but there was mostly grammar with some immersion brought in there as well. There's not a lot of differences when it comes to assignments. You're still going to have assignments in class. You're still going to be having the students write and talk and work in the classroom. But how you grade the assignments and what you focus on is more important. For example, if you have an assignment where they need to write some sentences, instead of just writing sentences to conjugate verbs, that's not the point. Write sentences to get an idea across, get a meaning across. For example, in my level one classes right now, they're working on descriptions and to being able to describe themselves and other people. Instead of just telling them, you're working on the verb to be, and I want you to write, I am so many times. No, describe yourself. Describe someone else in the classroom. Describe a celebrity. So really, they're working on those verbs, but it's kind of they don't necessarily know that it's happening. They're just learning it by doing it. And after a while, it's going to start out messy. I tell them all the time just to vomit French. Throw it up, and it's not going to be organized. You'll eventually start to organize that as you get into your higher levels. So for those thinking it's a gigantic jump, really it's not that big of a jump. It's where the focus changes. You can still have similar assignments. You can have similar tasks. You just need to modify what it is you're actually looking for. And you want to make sure that the students are focused on not perfection, but being able to get their ideas across. Part of that for me, where I'm a relatively new teacher, is a kind of a trial and error. And really, it's the same thing for the students. If they think they know what they need to do, try it and see if it works. If it doesn't, that's okay. You're not going to lose a million points and your grade's not going to drop to an F because you used the wrong form of to be or to have. You've learned, hopefully, and next time you come around to doing it, you'll do a little bit better job. And even if you don't, you'll still continue to work on that as we go through the levels.
All right. Well, thank you for explaining that. That hopefully gives you just a little insight into what proficiency is and how that's starting to look. For this next part, you guys, I just wanted to share two analogies that I've kind of just invented in my mind, but I share this with my students as my way of explaining my expectations to them or the way that we grade. And the thing that I would say first that when I was thinking about this is that before I explain the analogies, proficiency is not really unique to just world language teaching. I think it's kind of a pervasive school of thought in a lot of fields. For example, before I taught, I was a registered nurse at one of the local hospitals, and they were just changing the way that we assessed patients. And the buzzwords in the medical field now are things like evidence-based practice, outcome statements. You had to write outcome statements and what was expected of this patient by this certain time. And that's how they were measured rather than simply a regimen of pharmaceuticals and physical therapies and things like that. It's more outcome based. And even other educational subject areas are adopting the idea. My minor was in math. And so before I taught foreign language, I mostly taught math at the junior high. And what they were asking us to do at that point was switch to standards-based grading, which is basically an outcome-based grading or proficiency thing. We're going to talk about standards-based grading in another episode. But anyway, so it's not just world language. And so these analogies, I feel like, fit kind of this general school of thought that we've adopted in this era. So here are the two analogies. I'll explain them both, and then I'm going to ask you to comment on them. So the first one, the analogy is baking cookies. And the old way that baking cookies was taught, when I say baking cookies, just think foreign language teaching, was was a list of ingredients, and they would test you on, do you know the ingredients? Do you know that sugar and flour and butter and eggs and vanilla get mixed together to make a cookie? And if you could recite that and say, yes, I know that butter and sugar and flour and all those things go into making cookies, then your grade was an A if you understood what ingredients went into making the cookies and if you could recite what temperature the oven had to be at and all those things, which is good because you have to know those things to make cookies. But what we've switched from is instead of assessing, do you know this list of ingredients and steps, to can you make a dang cookie? That's pretty much what we're talking about now. Can you produce a cookie that tastes all right or is pleasing enough to be acceptable as a cookie and communicate the ideas that are communicated through a good cookie? And so we kind of stand at the other end and we say, show me your cookie first. And if your cookie's terrible, then we go back and we say, oh, you forgot the sugar. And that's kind of how we assess. So we can go back and fine-tune things and tweak it. And that's where we stand now. And the other analogy is a little more abstract, and it just comes from my math background. But in math, in seventh grade math in particular, when you introduce the idea of a function, you draw a picture up on the board with X, your first number, with an arrow going into a box, and the box does something to that number, and it spits out the Y value. So if you put it in X, and the box or the function was... multiply by 2, well, if you put in a 2, that spits out a 4. If you put in a 5, that spits out a 10. And so where our assessment was before was, do you know how to put the number in? And we kind of stood in front of the box seeing what was going in and making sure that they knew that they were putting the right things in. And now we've kind of moved to the Y value side, and we say, what's coming out of there? Can you do it? This is what I expect to come out of here. And that's how I'll grade you. And if the right thing is not coming out, we can kind of go back and find where the problem is. And that's the role that grammar and vocabulary play, is we don't teach them just for the sake of teaching them, but we use them as a ways to make it better. Well, I kind of want to hear what you guys think about that. So, Davin, I'd really love to hear what do you think about those analogies? Do they make sense to you? Is that an accurate depiction of what proficiency teaching is, or can you add to that?
Yeah, I'd like to focus more on the cookie one personally, because that's a great analogy that you came up with, that knowing the ingredients to the recipe and be able to just to memorize those is just focusing on the content. But taking that recipe and actually doing it yourself, mixing it properly, cooking at the right temperature, letting it cool for whatever amount of time, that's a skill part, and that takes practice too. Hardly anybody bakes a perfect batch of cookies the first time and then they're set. And so content is important. It's essential because you have to know the ingredients to make the cookies, like you said, but it's the skill of actually making the cookies that we care about. And so in the foreign language classroom, you know, who cares if the students memorize 100 verbs and every single tense of those verbs? Because then they're thrown into a scenario, a real-life scenario, where they actually need to maybe use those verbs, but they can't. So all that comes out is a string of verbs. I have, I am, I prefer, I want, because that's all they know is content. They've never used any kind of output. They don't have the motor skill to actually string that together into a fluid conversation. So I think the cookie analogy works really, really well.
Right. All right, thanks, Davin. Miles, how about you? What do you think?
Well, I want to say Davin probably took the cookies just because he wants a cookie, and I kind of want a cookie too. I wonder how much the analogy being a positive example like cookies makes people want to pick that one. But no, seriously, I'm gonna go with the math one because math isn't as fun as a cookie. I guess it depends on the person though. Some people might have gluten intolerances and might enjoy math.
I love math.
It can be fun when you know what's going on. But with that math analogy, I think that's a pretty good analogy as well, because we want to focus on the output and what students can do. And then if they're not able to do it or they are able to do it, let's go back and look at the whole show your work in math. The work for us is let's kind of break down what you wrote, or let's break down how you said it, or if you're reading something, let's break down what words did you see. So let's break down to try to determine what proficiency level you're at. You can actually see, you know, how many full sentences did you write? Or you kind of broke down when you tried to push yourself, and you tried, you know, you broke down when you're trying to combine these ideas, and that's okay. That's why your answer came out messed up and wrong, but it's okay because you're doing more than you're comfortable with, and that's good. So with the math analogy, you can go back and look at that work that's been done. Also, you don't have to eat any crappy cookies. So I don't want to eat any crappy cookies.
Good. Well, thank you very much, Roger. Roger's our department head here at Clearfield High School, so we saved the biggest hitter for last year. What do you have to say?
I'm going to go back to the cookie because math gives me anxiety, and I think I'm allergic to it. And I teach language for a very specific reason. But anyway, I love the cookie analogy because, like Davin nailed it on the head. Like, we have our ingredients and things, but can we actually make it? And the comparison I see is if we're really good at knowing the ingredients and having all of the parts, that would be the equivalent of going to a tienda in Mexico and handing the clerk a note with their part of the conversation and then having yours and saying something like, "Good evening, I am here in search of blank product. Do you have something that will fit my needs?" And then the clerk reading their line, like, that's ridiculous. That could never happen. So you don't hand someone their ingredients and say, "Okay, here are your ingredients, and I have mine. Let's go make a cookie." It eliminates spontaneity and the ability to respond to anything spontaneous, which just eliminates any pleasure and joy in life. Nothing enjoyable or fun or unique, authentic would happen without spontaneity. We have to be able to have skills to perform tasks effectively and confidently to be able to be spontaneous and have that kind of zest of life in everything that we do. It gives us the ability to make cookies, and then now that I can make a cookie, I wonder if I can start to maybe experiment with cake. I don't know what would be a close thing with between cookies and what would be a next step, but then they can start to push themselves and challenge themselves to make something else, make something new with what they've done. So that's the comparison that I see there, but I think it's like very visual and very perfect.
Awesome. That analogy was even deeper than I realized. You guys handled that well. Well, that's exactly what I was thinking, and just like you said, it's like, you know, you get thrown into a kitchen or cooking competition, and you've been trained to list ingredients and tell them what the temperature is on the oven, but you have no idea how to put it all together and make that actual cookie. You'd just be standing in the kitchen listing off ingredients for cookies, but not getting any work done. But you guys are very eloquent and said that even better than I could, so thank you.
Yeah, I would just add, you made me think of like Iron Chef. When, my goodness, you get up there with a basket with a fish head in it and some a thing of sugar and some leeks and I don't know what, and they have to make a meal out of that. That's where you take all that knowledge that you've gotten. You push yourself to that intermediate level where you're just throwing stuff out there and hoping it works based on the experiences that you've had with the language.
Right. Yeah. And you might get a terrible product, but you're going to learn from that terrible product and pick yourself up and move on to something else next time.
Those are some great analogies. I loved the back and forth. I thought they cover things pretty well. They really dive into some of the thoughts with proficiencies where we have to work on and try to teach the students different skills. It's not just what you can memorize and what you can get out there, but the skills to be able to use in a variety of situations and contexts. So that's one of the things as we go forward with this podcast that we're hoping to do is to give you different ideas, and as we're even doing this, to give ourselves ideas to help us in the classroom and really help the students, because that's what it's all about, to try to make things better for them, to make it easier for them. Coming up, some of the topics that we'll have, the next couple are all going to be about standards and proficiency-based gradings, looking in as in-depth as possible into the actual standards and what does that mean for our classroom, and how do we take those standards and push them into assignments and push them into our grading and try to make sure that we're actually doing what's best for the students, what's currently best practice. Some of the other topics that we'll be going throughout this podcast, building a strong department. I feel that here at Clearfield, and we've got a pretty dang good department. Pardon my French, haha. No, we've got a really good department. We'll be talking about how to build a strong department, as that's necessary. You've got to have a good department. Some other things, being able to manage your classroom in a proficiency setting, the classroom is going to be a little more chaotic seeming than it would be otherwise. So how do you manage that? How do we promote languages? How do we get more people involved with wanting to learn a language? Some of these different topics, and hopefully going forward, we'll be able to include you, whoever you may be, in our topics, in our discussions. As you have questions, feel free to email us and contact us, so we can work that in, and we hopefully get a lot of input, so we can continue to improve this and ourselves as teachers.
Great. All right. Well, thank you, Miles. Would you guys say then, or is it fair to say, that our goal with proficiency really is, I think Roger mentioned something about this earlier, but our goal really is for every kid, in theory, to be able to parachute right down into Mexico City or Paris or Zurich, Switzerland, and head right down the street and be able to buy their lunch and go to the bank and grab a taxi and exist with those functional abilities and enjoy that part of it, rather than being able to walk into the restaurant with a list of ingredients that you've memorized. That's kind of what our aim is. Would you say that's true?
I would agree with that, and I think our students would actually agree with that as well. Even though a lot of our students are taking foreign language classes, a good number of them are taking it for a scholarship or 2-year requirement for university, and there are a few that generally actually want to learn the language. But I think once the students get through our classroom and they see how they can actually master the language and they really can learn to speak in another language, and they see how much fun it is. And as Roger said before, they learn about the culture and the people, and students, I think, will also see that the value really is that, hey, I can go somewhere now and use this language. And I definitely think that's the entire goal of what we're doing.
Yeah, it reminds me of during parent-teacher conference, Davin came over and sat by me and told me about an experience he had with a parent and their student, who just thanked Davin for teaching to proficiency and for measuring all modalities, the reading, listening, writing, and speaking, because the student felt empowered, like they really could perform tasks with the language. And I thought that was really cool, that the student, just less than a quarter of the way into the term, could recognize those things and express it to their parents. I thought that was really neat.
Well, great. Well, that does it for the first episode of Level Up. Thanks for being here, everybody. And we plan to put out an episode once a week throughout this school year, approximately once a week. We'll take a couple breaks during winter break and spring break and little things like that. But that's it for now. So we'll finish by saying Auf Wiedersehen.
A plus.
Hasta luego.
Hasta la próxima.
All right, well, thanks for getting down with Level Up. We'll see you next week.